Well, if you would, please open your Bibles tonight to Daniel chapter 6. Book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 6. We'll be looking a little bit at that notorious story that so many kids know and so many teachers teach to their kids in class, the Daniel and the Lion's Den story. Obviously, we're looking at it from a more mature lens tonight and make a couple points about it. But I want to tell you that the book of Daniel begins with the first phase of Judean captivity. Nebuchadnezzar, after having besieged Jerusalem, he removes the valuable vessels from the temple and he brings it over into his kingdom in Babylon. And he orders one of his chief officers to get the best of the people from that land in order that they may serve him and be of use to him in the Babylonian kingdom. And it is here that we're first introduced to the young man Daniel. We say young man, we know that he is relatively young at this point in history. It is hard to know for sure how young he is. We do know he's below the age of 20. Some speculate he might have been as young as 14, perhaps in the range of 14 through 16. And if that's the case, what an impressive example Daniel begins to set, not only for his fellow men and fellow brethren in captivity, but also what a powerful example he sets for these Babylonian pagans. He was among some noble young men of the sons of Judah that were taken into captivity. You know the other three as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They get a chapter to themselves in Daniel chapter 3. But in verse 4 in Daniel 1, the Bible tells us these were youths in whom there was no defect, who were good looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, who had the ability for serving in the king's court, and he ordered him to teach the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. This is his instruction to his chief Aspenas. He says, you are to take these men and essentially you're about to brainwash them. You need to brainwash these men for the varied purposes that I will instruct them with. But the problem with that is Daniel and his friends were Jewish. And they weren't just your ordinary Jew. They were faithful Jews. Very early on in the biblical narrative in Daniel's prophecy, it's establishing a faith that not only Daniel has, but his three friends have with him. And it tells us especially concerning Daniel's faith here in this very chapter in verse 8. Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine from which he drank. So he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. I want you to understand, Daniel doesn't get to pick here. Daniel doesn't get the comfort of a multiple choice, A, B, C, or D. Daniel can only get what is being given to him. And the fact that he is refusing it means that he is risking his life. Daniel refusing to partake of these festivities and the instructions that have come directly from the king himself. Daniel is putting his head on the line, but not only his head, the head of all his compatriots that are with him. Because it's not only him that's refusing, the Bible tells us that it's also the other men who are with him. But it works out to his favor. It tells us that he was prospering in the kingdom, that he was faithful to God. And one of the reasons I think Daniel refused to do this is possibly because it was unclean food, or it would have been restricted because of idol worship and some of the things that would have been associated with that at that time. But the point and the overarching message of Daniel 1 to prepare us for the rest of the book is that Daniel is different. And Daniel's not afraid to stand up for the truth. Daniel's not afraid to risk his life for the sake of God, for the sake of his faith. And so by the time we get to Daniel chapter 6, several years have passed. It is no longer the Babylonians who are in power. Now it's the Medes and the Persians. And the kingdom comes to Darius the Mede in Daniel chapter 6. And it tells us Daniel is prospering. Beginning in verse 1, it seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they would be in charge over the whole kingdom. And over them were three commissioners, of whom Daniel was one. And these satraps would be accountable to him, that the king might not suffer loss. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and the satraps, because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Then the commissioners and the satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to their government affairs, but they could not find no ground of accusation against him or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful. Then these men said, "We will not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God." Can you imagine being an outsider and you're tossed into the realm of a foreign kingdom? They hate you, they despise you, they want nothing to do with you. But you are so great and you're so good, you are so faithful and trustworthy that the pagan king that took you into captivity elevates you to a point of authority in his kingdom. And slowly but surely you climb up the steps, not because of anything you have done in and of yourself, but because of your faith to God. You are being successful in this kingdom. You're prospering for a reason. And in the midst of all of that, you have the pagan guys who hated you, who don't want anything to do with you. They have to answer to you. See how they wouldn't like that very much. And in addition to that, it tells us that Darius is about to make him second in command. Have we read that before in the Bible? We have. Remember, Pharaoh made Joseph second in command in all of Egypt. Daniel is about to ascend to Joseph's position in the Medes and the Persians kingdom. That's what Daniel is about to become. But something is about to go wrong. But the one thing we want to look at here tonight is this idea of fervent faith. Because this is something that Daniel especially, not just as a prophet, but even as a young man, as we talked about earlier, he establishes himself as one who is very faithful and passionately faithful, fervently faithful. And we want to look at some of the traits of this fervent kind of faith that he had from Daniel chapter 6. And I'll tell you that the first thing is he was loyal to God. He expressed loyalty to God. And this kind of faith, fervent faith, is one that is all about a heart of loyalty and commitment. Daniel was loyal and committed to God in all aspects of his life, even in government affairs. Now, it's hard to find somebody today that is loyal and truthful in politics. It just really is. And I mean, even your boyhood friend whom you might have grown up with, and he grows up and you grow up and he becomes a governor or something like that, you know there's some tiny bit of corruption in there. Because as is true for not only this nation, but for all nations around this earth, politics is just corrupt. And it just almost always seems that you cannot get to the level of success that you want to without some level of bribery, corruption, or something involved in there. But not Daniel. Daniel was genuine. Daniel got there because he was doing everything by the book. That's kind of the way we would call that. He was a by the book guy. He never broke the rules. He never went outside of anything. And can you imagine how that would anger the rest of the people who've been doing everything by bribes, maybe going behind the back of the king and doing some stuff that he wouldn't approve of just to get success or just to get his attention? And then you look over at this Daniel who looks like this goody-goody-two-shoe guy, and he's just successful, and he's climbing the ladder faster than they ever imagined. Well, it's because he's loyal to God. And loyalty to God does not know any boundaries. You're not just loyal to God in church. You're not just loyal to God in your place of work. You're just not loyal to God in your place of business, whatever the case might be. You're loyal to God in everything. When we say that you're fervently faithful, it means that you're loyal to God despite whatever it is. And I know some brethren who struggle with the idea of paying taxes because they think it's wrong. Well, it may be wrong. It may not be what we would like. But, you know, the fact is, we're called to submit to the government as long as we're not compromising our faith. And Daniel will exemplify this. He will submit himself under a pagan dynasty for the rest of his life. He never gets out of captivity. He will die in captivity. But he is faithful so long as he is in captivity. And that's a hard thing to do. It's easy to be faithful in circumstances that you like, in circumstances that favor your faith, when things are going your way. But when things are not going your way, do you back away or do you remain faithful? Daniel remained faithful. God is always number one in his life, regardless of what he was doing and who he was and who he was with. The thing about loyalty is you don't straddle the fence. You don't go back and forth. When you're loyal to somebody, you're going to be with that person till the day that you die. That's what loyalty is. And this fervent faith rests on the assurance that God is greater than anyone who can be against us. And this is the kind of faith that not only talks the talk, but will walk the walk. When the commissioners and the satraps concocted a plan to have Daniel ousted, Daniel did not change. In fact, the text points us in a way that would make it seem as if though he grew even stronger, that he grew maybe a level or two in his faith. He did not succumb to the pressures. Now, this plan to have Daniel ousted was in regard to his fervent faith. Remember, they could not find anything to trip him up insofar as it was concerned with government affairs. So they said, we got to find something with relation to his religion. Because we know if there's one thing Daniel will not let go of, it's his God. And so they make this plan that they're going to make a decree. Anybody who does not pray to Darius the Mede, he will be cast into the lion's den. And Daniel does not shy away. Daniel does not back away and he does not run. Instead, he kneels down as was his custom, 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks to God as he had been doing previously. And the men come and they find Daniel doing this. And I want you to notice some of the phrases that is said about Daniel's behavior in this particular section. For example, in verse 10, when Daniel is said to be praying in his house, it said he was doing this 3 times a day, as he had been doing previously. In verse 16, the phrase is used, your God whom you constantly serve. In verse 20, again, the king repeats the phrase, the God whom you constantly serve. Daniel was loyal, and everybody knew it. Daniel was loyal, and he was so loyal that they could not help but to repeat it over and over and over again. In a matter of just 7 verses, it's repeated over 4 times that he was constantly serving God. All of these verses highlight his grounded, unwavering, fervent faith in the true and living God. And the thing about it is, it's not weak, right? It's not shallow. Daniel has built himself up to this point. Remember, we said Daniel chapter 1 begins, he might have been 14, 15, 16, and by the time we get to Daniel chapter 6, he might have been into his 50s, maybe even 60s. Significant time has passed, and I would suggest to you significant growth has happened in his faith. Because this isn't easy to back away from something like this, or to be faced with the temptation to run away from something like this, especially when you have a position of being number two in the kingdom. I mean, there's a lot of people who would say, you know what, I'm going to let go of religion for that. Being number two in the kingdom, it's an easy choice. For Daniel, it was an easy choice, and it was God over politics. And we say it's a faith that doesn't straddle the fence, and we get that from 1 Kings 18:21. Elijah goes up to Mount Carmel, and he's battling the 450 prophets of Baal. And he says, you got to make a decision for yourself. Choose if you're going to serve Baal. Choose if you're going to serve God. And the thing about it is, Those people waited until the end of that story to make their decision. Daniel didn't do that here. Daniel didn't wait for the end of the matter to see whether or not he would be faithful to God. He didn't wait and he didn't say, God, if you just help me out this one time, then I'll be faithful to you. No, he says, I am faithful to you now, whether or not it's going to work out to my benefit. And that's the difference between shallow and weak faith and a faith that is fervent and grounded. Fervent faith says, I choose to believe even though I am not yet seen. And that's why Jesus said to Thomas in John 20 and verse 28, blessed are those who having not seen yet believe. You may not know what the outcome is yet, but if you trust in me, that's fervent faith. This faith says, I choose to serve the true and living God. I choose you over everyone else. I will stay true to you no matter what till the very end. It's about realizing that no matter what situation we're in, the God who is for us is greater than those who are against us. And Daniel knew that. The second thing about it is something we've already touched upon. He was a shining example to everyone. Notice in this story, there are 120 satraps. They are three commissioners over them. Daniel was one of them. So there is at least 122 guys ganging up against Daniel in this story. At least. And I would suggest to you, not one of them was unaware of Daniel's faith. Every single one of them, from the least to the greatest, saw this man do what he did every day. And they all came together for the same purpose. We need to destroy Daniel in relation to his faith. They all knew it. And the fervent, faithful person, it's impossible to miss their behavior. It's impossible because they're just shining brightly. When a police officer pulls somebody over at nighttime, they got this huge flashlight over and they come by the window. Part of the reason they do that is so that they can see you. But part of the reason is to avoid you from attacking them, because it kind of blinds you a little bit. It sort of phases you, puts you in a state of shock a little bit. And that's what bright light will do. It will shock the darkness. And that's what Daniel did to these men. He shocked them because they were living in darkness. Meanwhile, you have Daniel over here in the brightest light ever. He was shining his light. It was so resounding. It was so enthusiastic. The commissioners and the satraps, they were in agreement that they would not find any ground of accusation against it was the law of his God. Now, these men were very well aware of that. And because of that, their plan was designed to be limited. I don't know if you've ever noticed that in this text, but in verse 7, the Bible says, all the commissioners of the kingdom, Daniel 6, 7, the prefects and the satraps, the high officials and the governors, they have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes any petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. That's a limited decree. There weren't very many 30-day decrees in these kinds of kingdoms. The point of limiting the decree is because they knew they were going to catch Daniel before 30 days expired. And the reality is it only took a couple hours. That's how bright his light was. They didn't have to wait a day. They didn't have to wait the next day. They didn't have to wait the next week. Daniel went immediately and he prayed and he gave them what they desired the most. They didn't have a reality to extend it to 30 days, but they said, if he gets afraid, maybe he backs away for a little bit. We know he's going to come back to it before 30 days. Talk about evil. And knowing that your guy on the other side of the room is a good guy that will fall into this trap. That's when you know somebody's really faithful. that they will not back away from something, even if it means their life on the line. His character, his personality, his faith, that's what distinguished him from everyone else. Everyone was aware of it, from the least of them all to the greatest of them all. One of the more encouraging things about this chapter is Darius, his attitude towards Daniel. You can tell that he loves Daniel, that he respects Daniel. In verse 12, when they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction, "Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den?" And the king replied, "The statement is true according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which may not be revoked." And they answered and spoke before the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petitions 3 times a day. As soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed, and he set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. And these men came by agreement to the king, and they said to the king, 'Recognize, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and the Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed.'" Darius, at this point in his kingship, has regretted signing this decree, because it's about to affect somebody that he deeply cares for. And the thing about it to me is their description of Daniel, they're trying to gain the king's favor here. I don't know if you noticed that. When they approach the king, notice how they describe Daniel. "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah." Daniel, in the king's eyes, is not an exile from Judah. Daniel is about to be his second in command. Daniel might have well as been his adopted son, so to speak. The Roman emperors in the late 2nd century, when somebody defected from another nation and came over to Rome and they were loyal to them, they considered loyalty more important than flesh and blood. If that person would die for that emperor would exalt them to the position that they wanted. The same is true here in this book. They could care less about where they came from. But these men are trying to gain the king's favor. King, look, we got something in common here. We're Medes and Persians just like you are. That Daniel, he's from Judah. He's an exile. He doesn't share the same things as we are. Besides that, he's disobeyed you. But then the king responds in a way that I don't think they expected or accepted. He was so distressed. He kept exerting himself, and finally they say, "Look, you can't change this law once you signed it." And in verse 16, the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought into be cast into the lion's den. And the king spoke and said to Daniel, "Your God, whom you constantly serve, he will deliver you." The king knew this, and I would suggest to you, I think Darius saw this, and that was why he was going to appoint him second in command. Pharaoh saw that God was with him in Genesis towards the end, and that's why he elevated him to second in command in Egypt. Daniel, in a very real sense, was a towering beam of light. There's a reason why we call a lighthouse a lighthouse, because it shines light out to the shore, into the bay, so that when the ships come in, they can see where they need to go. Because without that light, you're as good as lost in the darkness. The reality of this situation is these men do not want to be saved. They do not want to be in the light. They want to be in the darkness. Jesus would say in John chapter 3, "There was the true light that came into the world, but men loved darkness rather than the light. They loved practicing their sin in the darkness, because when you come into the light, your deeds are exposed." And the reality is, when you're in a lifestyle that is all about bribery, and hatred and jealousy and one-upping each other in a dog-eat-dog world, in a political realm, that's what it's all about, you don't want to come to the light. And so they had no interest in encouraging Daniel. They had no interest in keeping Daniel around. And the reality is the faithful person will not back away from any situation because it's politics or whether it's in the regular world. The ultimate purpose of having this fervent faith is not to glorify yourself, but it's to glorify God. And every aspect of this story is about God and not about Daniel. And that's the thing about it. Even though Daniel is a major character in the story, he's a minor character in comparison to God. Because God takes the forefront of this story. Every time the text comes back to Daniel, it's not really about him. Notice the subjects in each of those sentences are God. Daniel is the object of the sentence. Your God whom you serve, Daniel. God is the subject of that sentence, not Daniel. And that's remarkable because the Bible is trying to paint a picture that the glory belongs to God, not to man. And isn't that what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 14? You are the light of the world. You are a city set on a hill that cannot be hidden. Let your light so shine so that men may see your good works, but not glorify you, that they may glorify your Father who is in heaven. Believe you me, that's what Daniel was doing. And finally, fervent faith does not shy away from trouble or tragedy. I am in no way suggesting to anybody in this audience tonight that trouble and tragedy is easy. I am in no way suggesting that the pains and heartaches and the sufferings this world has to offer is easy. Easy to deal with, easy to go through, easy to get over with. But I am saying that with this God on our side, we shouldn't worry about those things. With this God on our side, we should not allow that to overrule and overcome our lives. Of course, Daniel does not just show that in this chapter. He shows it all throughout the book, beginning in chapter 1. Daniel could have easily succumbed to the pressures. He could have easily said, you know what, I give up. I'm done. Relegate me to the lowest position in the kingdom so nobody's going to have to worry if I'm affecting their politics. Nobody's going to have to worry if I'm affecting their success in the kingdom. Just relegate me to the bottom of the food chain, King. But he didn't do that. He didn't succumb. He didn't compromise. He didn't back away from his prayer and his behavior. I mean, it could have been an easy resolution to satisfy all parties. The reality of the situation, if Daniel had gone to speak to these 122 guys and made some sort of decision, they would have backed away from the decree altogether. Problem solved, right? Christianity isn't easy. Jesus didn't die for easy. In fact, Jesus' life was not easy. Sometimes Christianity is really difficult. In fact, I believe a lot of times it's difficult. And one of the reasons it's difficult is because Jesus tells us the pathway that leads to life is difficult. In Matthew 7 and verse 14, when he's talking about the narrow way, narrow is the way that leads to life. It is a difficult way. Few find it. Few. And I don't know if you ever tried to travel on an extremely narrow road for a long period of time. It's not easy. In Belize, there's a couple of those roads, and I'll tell you, if you can drive on those roads, you can drive anywhere in this world, because they are dangerous, and you don't want to be on them very long, especially at nighttime. One of the reasons why the road is described as being wide is because there's a lot of space. There's a lot of real estate for you to go back and forth as you please. Sometimes we might say the pasture is greener on the other side. Well, Jesus doesn't want us to go on the other side for green pasture because Psalm 23:1 tells us he will lead us to green pastures, whether it seems difficult or easy to us right now. And of course, that's what Daniel's life would demonstrate. In times of great difficulties, in times of persecution, in times of pain and trouble, God doesn't want us to say, I'm going to back away. Instead, he wants to say, I need to get closer. And in reality, if we let it happen, that's exactly what's going to happen. It will force us to draw closer to God. If you're in a hospital bed and the doctor can't do anything for you, the nurses can't do anything for you, your family and your friends and your loved ones can't do anything for you, I guarantee there's only one person you're going to turn to, and that's God. If you're honest with yourself, it's God. I mean, even the atheist, it will cross his mind, believe me. It will cross his mind. Even the atheist. Because pain and suffering will force us to come to the recognition there's only one man that can take that suffering away, and that's God. That's Jesus. And so Daniel does what anybody should do in times of trouble and tragedy. Pray. Pray. And you know, we say a lot of times, well, what can I do to help? And sometimes we can do a lot to help. Physically, materially, assist somebody, buy groceries for them, whatever the case might be, take care of their babies, I don't know, whatever the case is. And then you pray in addition to all of those things as well. And sometimes if you don't need to help in those ways, you pray. You just pray. And Daniel prays. Immediately after he learns of the decree and that it has been signed, he entered his house. And in the roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day. Praying and giving God thanks as he had been doing previously. 3 times a day. And the thing about that situation, it tells us that his windows was open towards Jerusalem. That's not a coincidence. In 1 Kings chapter 8, beginning in verse 56, when Solomon is offering a prayer of consecration to God for the temple that he had just built, he says, God, if this people should ever be taken into a foreign land, if they turn their face towards you and they pray towards their land, forgive them, heal them, be with them. And that's what Daniel is doing. He turns his face and his windows is open toward Jerusalem and he prays to God. And what will God do in this chapter? He will deliver him. Look with me in verses 21 to 23. Daniel has been cast into the lion's den. A stone was brought, laid over it. It seemed like it was final, and that was the end of it. But in verse 21, Daniel spoke to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouths. They have not harmed me inasmuch as I was found innocent before him, and also toward you, O king. I have committed no crime. Then the king was very pleased and gave orders for Daniel to be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatsoever was found on him because he had trusted in his God. This was, you know, I've always wondered if somebody was to do a movie about this, and maybe they have, not one that I've seen that I like, but a movie about this particular scene when the king sees Daniel is alive and Daniel sees the king. I just wonder when their eyes met at that moment what that was like. To see the relief in the king's face that the man that he really looks after and he appreciates and he cares for is alive, but also to see the look in Daniel's face that my faith in God has paid off. I mean, I can't imagine what that must have been like for him. But I'll tell you this. That shows us the power of prayer. Joe mentioned a little bit about that, trust in the power of prayer this morning. But one of the things that's really important here, he says, my God sent his angel. Almost every time in the Old Testament, when someone is in a great predicament, and I mean death is certain, God sends an angel. In 2 Kings chapter 6 and in verse 16, when the Arameans surround Elisha and his servant with chariots and horses and they're about to come down and kill them, God sets up angels of fire all around them. And Elisha prays that the Lord would open the eyes of his servant. And he says, O Lord, please let him see that those who are for us are greater than those who are against us. In 2 Chronicles, the Bible tells us of Hezekiah. When Hezekiah is afraid because Nebuchadnezzar, I always confuse Nebuchadnezzar with Sennacherib. You know those Old Testament names? Sennacherib comes against Jerusalem, the Assyrian king. And he's about to come in and destroy them. And Hezekiah knows he does not have the military might and power to prevail. He prays to God. And what does God do? He sends an angel to destroy 185,000 people that very night. Joshua the high priest committed sin in Zechariah chapter 3. And the Bible tells us that God sends an angel to cleanse him from his sin. A high priest. There is no shortage of scriptures that show us that. In fact, in Daniel chapter 10, we see an angel fighting for Israel and an angel fighting for Persia. God takes care of his people. And that's what we appreciate about the book of Revelation so far. Right? We see a spiritual reality behind the scenes of what's taking place on earth. I don't know everything that's happening in the heavenly places, but I do know this. God is taking care of his people. But we need to trust in him. It is well established in the scriptures that God cannot be pleased without faith. Hebrews talks about that. And heaven cannot be had without faith. The faith that will accomplish much is the passionate, grounded, loyal faith that Daniel exemplified in his life. Fervent faith. When we get to the end and we stand before God, it is the quality of faith that we have that will determine where we spend eternity. It won't be the faith of your husband. It won't be the faith of your wife. It will not be the faith of your mom or your dad or your brother or your sister, or your grandparents or your friends. It's going to be your faith, your individual faith. And it's that faith that Jesus appeals to in Luke chapter 18 with the widow who relentlessly pursues justice from the unjust judge. And of course, Jesus in the context says, this unjust judge, he would not give this widow justice, but only because she kept pestering him and she kept pestering him and she kept pestering him. He said, okay. And Jesus says, how much more do you think God will grant justice for his people when they ask of him? In James chapter 4, James says, you do not have because you do not ask. And when you ask with the wrong motive. We have a God that is willing to grant every request with the right motive. Is your goal heaven or earth? Is your goal to see or to have faith? May Daniel's service to the Lord inspire all of us to purpose in our heart not to defile ourselves by the things of this world. May we all learn from the example of Daniel, who exemplified what it means to seek first the will of God and to obey God rather than men. To be continually devoted to him, loyal and committed all the days of our lives, to be grounded on the true and living word of God, and to have fervent faith. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not yet seen. And as John would say in 1 John 3, faith is perfected when we see Jesus face to face. And we can't wait for that day to happen. And I want to tell you, the more we look at the news and the more we look at our television these days, it's not helping our spiritual situations. In fact, it's making a lot of people look at it and think, is there another war? Is there another disaster looming that we don't know about? The future is uncertain, right? And that's what we don't like. It's not so much about the war, it's the uncertainty. That's what we don't like. Well, if we don't like uncertainty, then we need to do the one thing that we know we can be certain about. And that's being saved before Jesus returns. If you're here tonight and you need the gospel, be faithful to Jesus. Come to him in faith and submission and be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins. If we can help you to do that, come while we stand, while we sing.